Man, I knew my marriage was falling apart. I just didn't know how to fix it.
I felt like I would always be alone, even if I stayed married.
At Focus on the Family's Hope Restored Marriage Intensive, we offer hope to couples in crisis so they can have the marriage they've always dreamed of.
For the first time, I felt like my husband truly heard me.
I've received some great tools from the counselors that have changed my life and my marriage.
To begin the journey of finding health, go to HopeRestored.com today.
Today on Focus on the Family, Shanti Feldhahn shares some simple ways to improve your marriage, like this.
Another little sign that really mattered to show your love for your wife was things like texting her or leaving her a voicemail during the day. Just, you know, how much you care about her. What the women said is, if literally you'll take 10 seconds and send that text message right when you're thinking of it to say, you know, I can't wait to come home to you. I love you so much. It'll take you 10 seconds. But the women said things like, I saved that voicemail. You know, because it's a little thing, guys, but it really does matter.
You'll hear more ideas from our guests that you can try today. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, as we explained last time, Shanti Feldhahn has spent years studying research findings from thousands of married couples and has interviewed hundreds of couples who have extremely strong and happy relationships. Shanti believes that the best way to have a good marriage is to copy what happy couples are already doing, and that's what she's sharing with us again today. This will be a very encouraging message for couples who are in a pretty good place, but just need a tune-up. If you need more serious help, please give us a call and we'll help you navigate that.
Yeah, and again, the number to contact is 800, the letter A and the word family. And let me mention that this content is covered in Shanti's book, which we have here, The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. Well, here's Shanti Feldhahn speaking at a Convene conference for Christian business leaders in Southern California on today's Focus on the Family.
Okay, next topic, next little thing that we found, next secret of the happy couples that I want to tackle. This one actually cracked me up because this is a perfect example of where what the happy couple said to do sometimes was at complete odds with what they actually did. When Jeff and I were doing the research, one of the ways that we would arrange interviews was if we were going to speak in a particular city, we would tell the organizer, you know, the honorarium, the travel expenses, like we'd go through all of that. And oh, by the way, because we're in the middle of this research project, one of the other things we need to do is to have you arrange 3 or 4 interviews, hour-long interviews, with one of the couples in your church that's the most happily married couple that we can interview. And we just would dig into their lives and what their story was. And we wanted to get over, at the very beginning, before we dug into what their habits were, we wanted to find out what their advice was, because these happily married couples are asked for their advice all the time, and so we wanted to get it out on the table, sort of get it over with, like, what do you think your secrets of why you're so happily married are, which was, you know, helpful. But almost always, one of the top three was, it's really important to not go to bed mad. It's really, really important to not go to bed mad. And so I would always say, oh, yes, absolutely, I totally agree. But do you ever go to bed mad? Well, it's a really important principle, you know, and we tell young couples that when we do premarital counseling, you know, it's like, no, I get it. I get that it's a really important principle, but that's not actually what I'm asking, Mr. and Mrs. Happy Couple. What I really want to know is whether you personally, do you ever go to bed mad? Well, you know, sometimes when we tell people this and it's like, no, I get it. And then finally, we would say, no, I just want to know, do you go to bed mad? And they always said yes. We found there were 1,000 couples in this study group. We found 3 of the happy couples that said they never went to bed mad. Because in reality, what they had learned is that there were times where you have 2 upset, exhausted, angry people who are trying to duke something out at 1 in the morning. At some point, nothing good is going to come from that point on, right? And then we found what I thought was one of the biggest aha moments, the most important pieces of this puzzle. It turns out the most important thing isn't what they did the night before. The most important thing is what they did the next day. It turns out that when you wake up in the morning, half the time, you're kind of find that having a good night's sleep sort of solved the thing, and you wake up and you're like, what was that about, right? But they found that if that issue was still there the next day, the happy couples didn't let it go. They addressed it. Now, I will tell you that this was an occasion of great angst for me as I was recognizing what I was hearing. Because in every single one of these other studies, what we found through this rigorous scientific approach backed up what the Bible had said all along. We found the exact same thing Scripture has been saying all along. And suddenly, in this one, I was really conflicted because all of those happy couples all referenced Ephesians, don't let the sun go down on your anger, right? It's really important to not let the sun go down on your anger. They all said that. And so I was really wrestling with this as both a social scientist and a follower of Jesus. And finally, a pastor who was also a counselor, when I was explaining how conflicted I was, he started laughing. He was like, I need to show you something. And he pulled out that verse in Ephesians in his old-fashioned printed Bible as opposed to the ones that's on your phone, right? And if you look, and he said, look at this. And he pulled out that Ephesians 4:26, I think. And first of all, just as a quick aside, that passage in Ephesians isn't even referring to marriage. It's referring to living in community and all that. But setting that aside for a minute. Pulling out his paper Bible, he pointed to that verse and he said, look at that little caret. You know how sometimes you see in the Bibles, there's a little star or a little cross and it references to another scripture? There's a tie there. I had never noticed this before, but Paul, when he was saying this, he was actually quoting a verse in the Old Testament. He was quoting a verse in the Psalms to his audience, which his audience would have been very familiar with. And the context of the overall verse is, in your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Okay? He was quoting Psalms 4:4. You can go look it up. He was quoting Psalms 4:4. Psalms 4:4 says, in your anger, do not sin. Think about it overnight and remain silent. And so the apparent issue is, in your anger, don't sin. If you need to duke it out at 1 a.m. to not sin in your anger, do that. But if you need to think about it overnight so you don't sin in your anger, do that. Because that was one of the things that a lot of the happy couples had found, is that somebody would say something that they regretted the next morning. Someone would agree to something that they felt like railroaded into and they'd resent it the next day. And that in reality, that there is a benefit in waiting and actually getting a good night's sleep, and that if the issue is still there, to deal with it. Now, I will make a little note to all the husbands in the room. For your wife, if the equivalent of the black cloud of doom is hanging over your head when it's late at night and you're arguing, you may be able to click that off and go to sleep. She's going to be staring at the ceiling all night, okay? It's really important before you go to sleep to resolve that by being able to say, look, we're okay. I need to sleep, but we're okay. So just a quick note about that. Okay, moving on. Next topic that we found was really, really impactful. So I want to tell you an example of a couple that we talked to who did something, and I'm going to ask you to diagnose. I'm going to tell you this little story. I'm going to ask you to diagnose what he was doing. So I would always ask these couples, it was kind of fun actually, the happy couples, I would always ask them to take me through their last argument, their last fight, and hope that, you know, we weren't causing marriage problems when they drove away from talking to us. But one of the guys, this was a very typical situation. When we said, take us through a last fight, he said, I'll just tell you something that's happened a few days ago. He had apparently been working really long hours, like 70, 80-hour weeks, because his company was trying to land this big deal, this big contract. And it was all culminating on Thursday morning at like 6 o'clock in the morning, he was going to get on the plane and go to some other city and sign this massive contract. So weeks and weeks and weeks, Thursday morning he was going to get on a plane. On Wednesday, he had been working so many hours, he hadn't had a time to get to the dry cleaners, and so he had no clean shirts for this trip. And so his wife, they had three little kids, and so he called his wife multiple times and said, look, are you sure you're going to be able to get to the dry cleaners? Because if you can't, I can, but I have to because I have no shirts for this trip. And she's like, yes, honey, yes, it's fine. And he's like, are you sure? He called her three times, to offer three times, because he said she could be a little scatterbrained and forget these things and running around with the kids. And she said, no, I got it, I got it. He said, I arrived home at 10 o'clock at night to find the dry cleaners was closed and she'd forgotten to get the shirts. And he said, I was so mad. I said, okay, what'd you do? He's like, this is when I always have to diagnose what's going on. He's like, you know, you don't even want to know what I was thinking. I'm like, yes, I do. I want to know exactly what you're thinking. And so here's what he said he did. He's like, I went stomping downstairs. I was so upset. Apparently he does carpentry, like as sort of a way of like a hobby or whatever. So he said, I went stomping downstairs to my workshop and I'm down there with the pieces of wood and I've got a rubber mallet and I'm pounding the wood together. And I'm like, okay, what are you thinking? And he said, I'm thinking, I'm so furious because I asked her three times and she does this all the time. And he was like explaining this. And then he said, but that's not really fair because I know the kids were sick and the baby was, you know, needing to go to the doctor, and then she had to stand in line at the pharmacist's office and then have to go all the way across town for the other medicines. And, you know, he's going on and on and on. And then, you know, she had still had to go to the grocery store and make us dinner. And she always makes us dinner no matter what's going on. Every night she makes sure to make dinner no matter how late I'm home. And she's such a good wife. And why am I being such a jerk? Do you see what he did? Diagnose for me. What did he just do? Wasn't just that he forgave her. He started thinking about the positive to talk himself out of being mad. That's something that we found the happy couples did, not universally, but in huge numbers, that they focused on the things that were good and excellent and lovely and worthy of praise rather than the things that were worthy of driving them crazy. Philippians 4:8. It's one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Philippians 4:8. In the middle of something that was a legitimate concern, they focused on the good things to talk themselves out of being mad. This was, to me, this was a powerful, powerful surprise, a powerful mechanism, because it is so easy for us when we are upset, legitimately upset, and legitimately angry, it's not just that we can stew on something. It's truly that we can talk ourselves further and further and further into being upset about this, and further and further and further into hopelessness, when instead an answer can be as close as finding the good that is there all along and focusing on that, even though this other thing is still out here, focusing on that thing that's going to change our minds, that's every bit as real as the thing that's driving us crazy. Incredibly important for us to sort of put that type of thinking cap on when we're upset. And the problem is when we're upset is when we least want to do that, right? When we're upset is when it's really easy to want to wallow in being upset. So the question is, do you want to wallow or do you want a happy marriage? Because it looks like those two things are mutually exclusive. And it makes all the difference in the world if you will focus on the positive. I'll give you a little example of this. So Jeff, we have had many marriage issues in years past, because I am unfortunately in our marriage, I am the messy one and Jeff is the neat one. And so for any of you women out here who are the neat ones and you're frustrated that your husband is messy at times, can I just beg for grace on the part of the messy person in the relationship? Because it's just not a thing for me. It's just, I didn't get that gene. And I hope my mom never sees this video, But like my mom is the most amazing, wonderful human being on the planet, but she didn't know how to keep things neat either, so I never learned it. Literally, when I was 12 years old, we were out walking the neighborhood, and we came home to find police cars in front of our home. And another neighbor, a friend, had come over to have a cup of coffee or something and had called the police because she thought our house had been ransacked. I never learned how to keep a neat house. And I try. It's not that bad. You know, I try. But it would drive Jeff absolutely crazy that I would pile up mail on the island or whatever. Or, you know, the kids' Legos and toys would be over the, you know, living room floor. Or my shoes would be sitting in the kitchen where they had no right to be or whatever. And it would just bug him so much. And he would pray and ask God, help me figure out how to deal with this. And then one day, he felt like the Lord said, look at those Legos. Look at those shoes. Look at that mail stacked up on the island. Yeah, that drives you crazy. But that's a sign that you have a wonderful wife who adores you and two little kids who think you are the best thing ever. And you could be living in a perfectly neat, pristine apartment back in Boston and be all alone. And how grateful you should be that even though, yeah, this stuff drives you crazy, think about how grateful you are. That's a sign that you have a wife you prayed for and two little kids that you love and who love you. And he said it completely took away that that malaise, that black cloud of doom that was about that issue. And I would encourage you guys, whatever that issue is that drives you crazy, when you get into an argument, stop yourself the next time and look for those things that are excellent and lovely and worthy of praise and focus on that. You'll find that it actually stops that train of thought even before it gets started. Okay, final thing. So one of the other topics, really simple, is that we found that no matter what the happy couples, how they viewed each other, all the things that they did, one of the primary things that they considered about the other person was they considered that their spouse was their best friend. And no matter what, they treated their spouse first and foremost like a best friendship. Now, studies have been done on what makes somebody best friends. What are the things that actually make you able to be best friends with somebody? The studies have found the greatest predictor of friendship is absolutely not what you would think it is. If I were to ask you guys what do you think the greatest predictor of friendship is, you'd probably say the same things that I did. Because I would have said, I don't know, you know, shared attitudes, similar temperaments, similar values, you know, those kinds of things. And instead, those are a distant second, third, and fourth. The number one predictor of friendship is geographic proximity. You are the best friends with the people that you see the most often. And we all know that's true because we've all had really, really close friends who moved away or we moved away. And you still care about each other. You still love each other, but you just don't see each other as often. You're not as intimate. You're not as close. And it works the exact same way in marriage. Is that the most happily married couples, regardless, and there were couples who were deployed. There were couples who traveled away from each other for business all the time in this group. Regardless of what their lifestyle was, they made it a point to treat each other like best friends who had to see each other or talk or communicate often in order to keep their friendship with each other tight. And this is honestly one of the things that happens when you get into tension with the other person. It's really easy to want to avoid the other person so you avoid the conflict. And actually, that's the worst thing that you can do. The happy couples, instead of avoiding the temptation to avoid each other, they spent more time together, not less, to rebuild their friendship. Final little example. I was talking to one of the women who had been in a really, really troubled marriage. I mean, to the point that they were really seriously considering divorce, and the only thing keeping them together was they had three little kids, and they didn't want to give up on this vow they had made before God. And she said, I looked at our calendar, and I looked at how much time each week, these three little kids were very busy, and they were very busy. She said, I looked at how much time each week we spent together just talking, just hanging out as friends, the way we used to, kind of. Not dealing with, you know, schedules and logistics, but just talking. She said it was about 15 minutes a week. And she's like, no wonder we're having these marriage problems. We're not even friends anymore. We don't even like each other. And so she looked at her schedule and she said, what can I do to change it? And there was very little without rearranging everything. But she realized twice a week, her husband took their seven-year-old to T-ball practice twice a week. And she said, there is no reason in the world that I have to load up the two younger children to drive with him to T-ball twice a week, except that is 20 minutes there on the way and 20 minutes back twice a week. And she said at the beginning, that is all she changed. And it completely changed their marriage because they were now spending that extra 40 minutes, those 2 days, just talking and sharing and catching up. And they started to like each other again. And that one thing allowed the spark of a lot of the other things that had to happen in order to restore their marriage. I would really encourage you to look from, if you have a good marriage and want to make it great, spend more time together. If you have a marriage that's struggling in some areas, spend more time together, just as friends. You'll see the difference that it makes. So I thank you guys for coming to this. I know we're out of time. I really, really hope that you guys will realize out of everything that we've said, let me just leave you with this note, this thought. Everything that we've said, I hope you see how incredibly simple these things are. Even just one of them will make a big difference. So my suggestion for you is pick one. Don't try to do them all. Just pick one and you'll see the difference that it makes.
And that concludes our presentation on Focus on the Family featuring Shanti Feldon.
John, this has been such a great two-part message from Shanti. Let me recap the main points for those who tuned in late. Based on her research with thousands of married couples, Shanti offered these simple ideas to improve your marriage. For wives, she noted that men need to feel respected and appreciated, so thanking your husband for everyday tasks is very important. Saying things like, thank you for changing that light bulb, boy, that one hits home, actually benefits your marriage. Shanti also noted that men have an emotional need to feel sexually desired by their wives. It's not just a physical thing, so wives need to think of that as a high priority. For husbands, Shanti explained that most women feel very insecure about how lovable they are. So whenever there's tension or conflict in your relationship, it's important for men to reassure their wives that they still love them in spite of the current difficulty. Shanti provided some great insights into the Bible verse that says, don't let the sun go down on your anger, which results in lots of couples fighting until the wee hours of the morning. A pastor pointed out that's actually a reference to Psalm 4:4, which says, in your anger, do not sin. Think about it overnight and remain silent. He said the emphasis is on not sinning when you're angry, and it's okay to think about it overnight if that's what you need. And Shanti found that most of the extremely happy couples were able to do exactly that, set the argument aside for the night and sleep on it.
That is really good advice. And I think certainly we experienced some of that dynamic where we felt obligated to fix the conflict right then and there and to work it out, even though we were too tired to think straight or to feel right.
Well, exactly. Shanti also pointed out that we can talk ourselves into being mad at our spouse by stewing about their faults, or we can talk ourselves out of being angry by remembering their best characteristics. We can choose to emphasize the positive in our marriage, is her point. And Shanti's final example was that we should treat our spouse like we would our best friend and press into the relationship when times are tough. We need to resist resist the temptation to punish our spouse by avoiding them and creating distance in our marriage. That is never helpful.
Well, I'd say she's right based on my own personal experience, right. Jim.
Well, I like that best friend analogy, because if you treat your spouse like your best friend, you will give them the benefit of the doubt because you trust them. That's why you're best friends. And of course, we're talking here about marriages that are generally healthy, not abusive. If you're in that kind of situation, please give us a call for a free consultation with one of our caring Christian counselors.
Yeah, we have lots of help here for that kind of a situation. Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, or follow the links in the show notes.
And let me encourage everyone to visit us online and check out our free marriage assessment tool. It's a fun quiz that will help you identify the strengths and the weaknesses of your relationship so that you can enhance your marriage in the areas that you need help in. Almost 1 million people have taken the assessment, and we're so glad we can provide insights into relationships and supply follow-up resources that will help. That's only possible because of the generosity of you, our donors. We are so thankful for you. And if you'd like to support marriages through Focus on the Family, let me encourage you to become a monthly donor. Any amount, large or small, is a great help to us, especially when it's on a consistent monthly basis. And when you make a monthly pledge of any amount, I'd like to send you a copy of Shanti's book, The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. It is chock full of simple, helpful ideas like you heard today. And if you can't make a monthly commitment right now, we understand that. We can send the book to you for a one-time donation of any amount.
And you can do that when you call 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459, or donate online, and the link is in the show notes. Remember to check out our free marriage assessment when you're at our website. It really is illuminating about where you're doing well in your relationship and maybe an area or two of growth. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for this Focus on the Family podcast. If you would, please take a few minutes and head to the podcast or leave a rating for us so others can discover this podcast. Maybe tell a friend to listen in next time as well. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back when we once more will help you and your family thrive in Christ.